I can tell by the almost instant peace when we settle down that this isn't a beginning class. We don't have to go through the principles of color, the practicing the scales from on the piano. We're in that stage where we're working on expressing our art. We're refining our art. And that, in the context of mysticism, it means that we're refining or enhancing constantly our awareness of oneness, because that's what this is about, oneness. In my oneness with God, I am one with all spiritual form and identity. So there is nothing that I experience in this life that is not of God. Now, if there is negativity, lack, disease, death, I have to look at that and say, now, is this part of God, or is this something that, how do I account for this? There can't be anything that's outside of God. So what is this experience of limitation that I feel in this life? If I know that in the experience of oneness, I'm one with all spiritual creation. Basically, it's perception. It is a belief. The great hypnotizer, you might say, is the belief that there is power outside of God, which is the belief in material cause and effect. As spiritual or mystical students, our purpose really in this life is to dissolve that belief, because as I am one and I realize this oneness and I can nullify a sense of power in material sense, that is just a sense of power. It is a belief in power. It really has no inherent power, because God is the only power. As I nullify that in my own consciousness, in my own daily life, through observation, I am withdrawing power. I'm taking away power from that particular situation, not only for myself, but for the whole world. So the purpose of expressing this art in the world really is to render material power powerless, to reveal material power as being an illusion, as being a sham. So how does this work? First of all, to start from the source, it all comes from our realization of oneness. So that silence is the basis of all of our work. And as we experience that and accept that that stillness is the presence of God acknowledging itself, and we understand that the nature of God is omnipotent, as now, as omniscient, ever-present, love, all of these attributes, that's all contained within that stillness. And we can't differentiate it. We can't mentally pull something out of that. What happens is that in this receptive state, when we are aware of the presence, it functions through us. If there is a need, it comes through. If there is a problem, and we do not try and mentally engage in the problem, but we return and we bring ourselves into this consciousness of stillness, then the solution to the problem comes through us as an activity of the Christ. So our whole practice is making ourselves instruments for this divine activity. And we aren't effective instruments, we're not really effective artists for this divine activity if we are carrying around a lot of concepts with us. If we have ideas of how the world should be, or how life should be, or I'd be happy only if this happened or that happened. All of those concepts are projections, and we carry them around like baggage, and we have to constantly drop this baggage and leave it where, you know, as in traveling today, if you leave a bag in an airport, they tell you very plainly it will be confiscated and destroyed. Well, that's fine. There was a joke. He said, I'm not doing anything to the bags under my eyes in the hopes that they will be confiscated and destroyed. The baggage we carry are these concepts. Now, we all have the concepts. We all have this belief in material sense because we are living in a material body, we are in this world. So if we strive to get rid of them, we're just going to be butting our head up against the wall. Because we're not going to get rid of our bodies, we're not going to get rid of this material sense of earth and of life, but behind the concept of the material world is spiritual reality. If God is the substance of all form, then that form is manifested. It's manifested infinitely, it's manifested continually, and we live in a spiritual manifestation. Where we find we have problems is that we look at this spiritual manifestation through a conditioned sense, and we start conditioning that spiritual reality to the point where we can't see the reality. All we see is our concept of that reality. And that concept has been built through judgment. So we go back to Jesus and one of the great principles that he gave, which is judge not after appearances, judge righteous judgment. So what is righteous judgment? It really is seeing through the appearance and not giving the appearance any power. As we judge, a judgment just by the fact of doing it is endowing something with power, or it is trying to take away power from something. It is creating an entity or a situation in our own mentality, and that situation, that creation of that situation comes through our individual conditioning. What are we conditioned into believing is good? What we are conditioned into believing is evil? What we are conditioned that frightens us? What situations frightens us when fear comes in? What is fear? Fear is the acceptance of a belief that this body is, and this self, that I am subject to death, that I am subject to suffering, that I am subject to poverty, that I am subject to disease. And the I that I am is not subject to any of those. But the concept of I that I have can be subject to those to the degree that I accept it as power. So the idea from the East that this world is illusion, that this world is Maya, is a little off in my understanding of what Joel was saying, because this world is not illusion, but it is our concept of this world that is illusory. So as we start giving up our concepts of this world, we start realizing the truth of this world, the reality of this world, until we start to see through the material manifestation to the spiritual reality. And we realize and understand that heaven is right here and now. If the kingdom of heaven is within us, I and the Father is one, then my life and my experience in this incarnation, in this plane of existence, should manifest and reflect and experience that truth. God is love. Love isn't passive. Love is active. Omniscience. That's not passive. That's not just a word. Omniscience is an activity. It's an activity of wisdom. It's something that we use every day. Omnipotence. Power is not static. Power is something that we use every day. Not in the use of power, but if you think of power, you think of energy. Omnipotence is the energy of our being. It is that which functions our body, which gives us the means to express this divine one. Gives us the means to look at this world without fear and to dissolve attachment to material sense. So it's important that we understand our mind. How does our mind work? Now, there, in reality, the principle of oneness, I'll start with that high point. There's only one mind, there's only one soul, and there's only one body. And all of it is God. God is the mind of the world. God is the mind of the universe. What is the mind? The mind is that instrument through which wisdom comes. It's that instrument through which the intelligence that allows us to solve problems comes. And that mind is universal. What is soul? Soul is not that within us that in the Orthodox concept that there's a little piece of God in every one of us, and when the body dies, the soul goes to heaven. No, actually, the soul is not in the body. The body is in soul. Soul is who we are. That is our identity. That is the I of our being. That is the truth. And then our soul is God. We cannot be separated from God. So that is that aspect, that facet of our being that is the most sacred. That is the place, that is the holy of holies, that when our mind becomes still and an instrument for spiritual expression, we end up uniting in soul and experiencing the oneness of God's creation, the oneness with all life, the oneness with all idea, the oneness with all form. And the body, one body. The body is the temple, is our temple. Now this body is not physical, it's spiritual. Our physical body is the concept of this one spiritual body. This one body expresses itself individually. So we are all individual, yet inseparable from this substance. God is the substance of all form. God is the substance of my body. God is the substance of your body. There's only one God. So my body and your body are the same. They're the same spiritually, yet they're individual. I have no idea of being you, and you have no idea about being me, yet we all can be one in this stillness, in this constant, this omniscience, omnipresence of God. But that oneness is going to be expressed individually. That's the nature of creation. You don't see any two snowflakes the same. You look at the heavens and you see the variety in the stars, the colors, the different forms, the different activities that take place. All of this is in consciousness. In our oneness with God, in this stillness, in consciousness, we are inseparable from the universe. I had an experience of this when I was a young man and sailing on a yacht in the South Pacific. It was very calm. We were at the equator and there was no wind, no clouds, the sea was calm, and that night there was no moon, and the stars were absolutely hardly any darkness between the stars. It was just an incredible vision to contemplate that space, so infinite, so vast, was so filled with light. And then I looked down at the sea, and the vastness of the sea. We'd been to sea for a week. There was, in 1,000 miles in every direction, nothing but water. And I looked down in that ocean, in that sea, and all the heavens, all the stars were reflected in the water. And it just was one of those realizations that come, that give you that experience of what it is to be in this mystical consciousness. That the stars that I saw in the sea were no different than the stars that I saw in the heaven, because they were all in consciousness. So suddenly, rather than being an observer of sea and boat and sky, there was the realization that the sea and the cosmos, all of it was within me. I am that I am. I am the sun and moon and stars. I am the earth and the sea and the land. That's the nature of life. Now this I am is unlimited. Yet at the same time, we're in this world. I still move around in a body. But no longer is that body a concept subject to the laws of matter. No, that body is the expression of the infinite one body that embraces and holds all the universe within it. Consciousness cannot be limited. You are consciousness. You're conscious. You are conscious of all that is around you. And when you close your eyes and you go into that stillness, you're conscious of the presence of God. It means you're conscious of all creation, from the subatomic particle to the greatest universe, the greatest galaxy in the universe. Now, that is always an expression. And the expression of this in its purest form comes through an individual who is prepared and receptive. Now our preparation, it begins with our mind in meditation, because it is through our mind that we perceive everything. We perceive our body, we perceive our feelings, that we can say is part of the mind. How do we feel about something? When we have an experience and it lifts our soul, and we kind of soar and we feel this great joy, what is that? That is the activity of consciousness, the activity of God coming into individual expression. And as we recognize that, without any limits, without any concepts put on it, without any judgment, saying, oh, this is of that, or this is because of that. When we have those kind of concepts, we limit then that experience, because what it is, it's pure joy, pure beingness. And our mind has a tendency to want to anchor something in human sense. So we go to some beautiful chapel in a castle that we are told, oh, there's a great atmosphere there. And we go there and we feel this great atmosphere. Our mind is going to say, oh, that is there, because it's that chapel. No, it's your own consciousness. You have, maybe somebody told you to go there and that you will feel this, but what you are feeling is not confined, it can't be confined to a place. What you are feeling is the infinite presence of God, but that you felt it at a specific spot. Your mind wants to localize, categorize that, and then everybody starts going to that spot to feel that. And then if they don't feel it at that spot, they think, oh, there must be something wrong with me. I remember my mom told us to, when we were in Scotland, in Edinburgh, that we had to go to St. Margaret's Chapel, that Joel had an experience there, Mom said, it's marvelous. And Sandra and I went to St. Margaret's Chapel, and we sat there and we meditated. Nothing unusual. It was a beautiful meditation. But we went somewhere else in Edinburgh. We went up to Arthur's Seat and looked out over the city. Oh, now there was an experience that was this fullness of joy and this complete realization that this is a spiritual universe. And the city was just like at our feet, just magnificent. And so if we had spread this around, oh, if you go up to Arthur's Seat, you'll have this great spiritual realization. Others will go up there and they'll say, yeah, it's rainy and it's cold and, you know, you can't see the city. So our minds want to take and bring everything down into its lowest common denominator, so to speak. What is it that we can relate to physically, where consciousness is the expansion, is the letting go of all of these limitations and the place upon where I stand is holy ground. There is no holy ground but where I stand. So when we see how our mind functions, we become observers of our mind. So obviously, we're not our mind. We can't be the mind and the observer. So I am not my mind. I have a mind. And that mind that I have, when I have practiced the presence of God, practiced meditation, becomes an instrument of spiritual receptivity. My mind doesn't change. My brain is just the physical representation of what mind is. I think someday the scientists will realize that the brain does not generate thoughts. It does not generate intelligence. Intelligence is infinite and it is invisible. But it comes into us. And everybody has that faculty, so it comes into everybody's brain. But how the brain or how the individual is conditioned, then that is how this infinite invisible is interpreted individually. So as we start to break through the conditionings that we have had, we begin to have a clearer perception of the spiritual. And we realize that perception, the clearer it gets, the less defined it is mentally or conceptually, so that we put no preconditions on it. We don't say that if you do such and such, you're going to experience the presence of God, because the presence of God is always with us. What we do in meditation, you might say that that's such and such, but I think that meditation really is getting rid of such and such so that there isn't anything there but a pure receptivity. In that pure receptivity, then we experience this dimension of life, and to the degree that we don't try to categorize it and conceptualize it, it has its fullest and freest reign within us. There is a point where spiritual activity becomes very specific, as necessary. In quantum mechanics, there is this idea of this quantum soup, and when, you know, it's the infinite potential. To me, it's not quite there because spiritual being is already complete. But the potential is that through this illumined mind, this infinite intelligence, this omniscience, comes into a specific activity or a specific form or a specific function, and it will meet a specific need. As long as we are maintaining this non-judgmental attitude. So let me see if I can make that a little more clear. Say you have a physical ailment. There's a pain in your body. And that pain in the body is registering in your mind, in your mentality. And you, the eye of your being, is wrestling with it. Comes into your mind, I have a pain, what do I do about it? So the eye is, there's that part of you that is observing. It's feeling, it functions through this body, but through the experience of oneness, you know that this body is an activity of consciousness. Consciousness is in the body. The body is in consciousness. So you, as consciousness, are aware that, okay, there's something going on in the body and it's painful. What do I do about this? Now, the metaphysical mind, if it's been trained metaphysically, will start to engage in a mental argument, in a mental battle. It will start affirming, it will begin with denying that there's anything wrong. Oh, this is nothing. I'm not going to give this any power. And then it will start affirming the truth. God is the only power. Now, that is an effective way of dealing with a physical situation, but it's still resident in the mental realm. It's not bringing spirit into play. The mystic will look at this, and rather than affirming God and denying the appearance of whatever the pain is, it doesn't resist. There's no resistance to the pain. There isn't the sense that I've got to do something to get rid of this. How am I going to get rid of this? This is bothering me. What am I going to do about it? And then either you do mental or you do physical remedies. Mystically, you do not react to the situation that's taking place in your body. In your mind, you are basically saying, okay, I have a pain. What about it? I'm not judging it. It's not good or bad. It's something that's taking place in my body. And you start contemplating, okay, body, what is body? Well, body is spiritual. There's only one body. What do I know about spirit? The first step in any treatment work is asking yourself, what do I know about God? And the moment that you bring God into your consciousness, the idea of God, what is God? Omniscient, omnipresence, love. What do I know of God? Well, I don't know anything of God mentally. I can't put God into my mind, but I know that when my mind is clear, when my mind is not filled with thoughts or concepts, that I experience this deep presence. Okay, so right now my mind is filled with having to deal with this pain. So what do I do with the mind to start stilling it so that I'm not arguing, I'm not fretting, I'm not worrying? You go, again, what do I know about God? Oh, I know that if I start bringing God into my consciousness, the thoughts will cease, the argument will lessen, that my mind will shift from being this agent of self, of I, that is trying to figure out a material situation, resolve a material situation. It slowly starts to shift into an activity of God. The I that I am is God. I know that if I am God, and God is omnipotent, then whatever is taking place in my body is not an activity of God. Oh, okay, well that gives me a place to go. If it's not an activity of God, I'm not going to go there. I can shift my attention. Suddenly I've detached myself from this sensation, from this pain. I maybe still feel it in my body, but I'm not attached to it because I'm not being attached to the body. realizing, well, the body is God. There is no suffering in God. There is no inharmony, disease in God. In God, there is only the now. There is only wholeness, perfection. So where is my mind gone? Now I am contemplating the nature of God. And as the nature of God starts filling my mind, thoughts start to cease. No longer, if I'm letting this happen and not using my intellect to feed my mind with things that I know, but I'm just letting coming through that which I've experienced, that which is not just an intellectual knowledge, but that which has been part of my being, part of something that I know. I'm not imposing anything on myself, and I can relax, and I have a sense of detachment. I have a sense of peace. And with that, peace will come the experience of the presence of God, what Joel called the click. Or in my sense, it's like a release. It's like a sigh. It's like it is done. I don't have to do anything. It was like when I had been studying for an exam in college, and there's a point where you just can't study anymore, and it's done, and there's a sense of freedom. Whatever I do in the test, I've done it. This is it. Now I'm just letting it go. That, in the spiritual context, that is your state of being when you have basically given yourself a successful treatment. You have now let it all go, and you're into God. And the peace is there, and you feel that stillness. And it doesn't matter whether the pain is still there or whether the pain leaves. You know that you have brought yourself under divine law. You have brought yourself into this one consciousness that is omnipotent, and nothing can exist in God that is not of God. So that means that nothing harmful, nothing destructive can exist. Now this is practicing the presence of God. In this consciousness then, I am a law. Law of spirit, law of truth, to all I meet. A law of spirit unto my body, to my home, my business, my family. I'm a law of peace to my community, to the world. For what takes place within, in this stillness, is universal. The whole world is affected by this stillness. as we live out from this level of consciousness, we are truly artists. We are instruments for God. The only way God functions in this world is through an illumined individual, an individual aware of this presence of God. Otherwise, there is no God in the human scene. You can pray forever for God to heal a disease or to bring peace, and as long as you have that concept that there is God and, it will not be successful. It is only when there is the experience of oneness, and that oneness is an activity of I. You have to realize that the I of you is God. There is no other God. But the soul of man. It's the only God there is. And it is through this realization that we experience freedom. It's through this realization that the whole world experiences peace. That civilization becomes more compassionate, more understanding. Life becomes more harmonious, less work, more expressive. If you look at the evolution of society, it's gone from individuals having to work in the fields to gather their own food or hunt in the forest to today, most individuals express themselves and live through ideas. It's moving away, further and further away from physical into mental. Because the mind has advanced, the nature of mind, the nature of even human understanding has advanced out of the idea, even 150 years ago, if someone was suffering from a disease, you put leeches on their body and sucked the blood out, because the idea was you were sucking out the impurities. No concept that you were also sucking out the blood of the individual that gave them life and weakened them, so whatever disease it was killed them. And then, those bad spirits, those, what do they call them? I can't think of it. Horrors, huh? Humus. Humus, exactly. That they finally got the person. That was a concept. Now, we still are dealing with lots of concepts. They're a little more refined, and a lot of the concepts that we hold today we probably believe are very true, given another couple of revelations like this particle accelerator. You know, a lot of what we hold as true will not be true any longer. And so we take another step in this evolution. But evolution is a product of spiritual realization. 100 years ago, 125 years ago, Mrs. Eddy and metaphysics were considered absolutely fringe, just crazy, that anybody would think that they would be able to spiritually have this communion with God. Today, it's spread into so many forms that in America, where religion hasn't been growing, people that claim to be spiritual has. Not that they claim to be spiritual, but they follow a spiritual path. I think in America, 98% of the people believe in God, but maybe 40% go to traditional churches or follow, practice traditional religions. So what are all those other people who believe in God but don't go to a church? Where are they? What are they practicing? They're reading metaphysics, they're reading New Thought, they might be studying mysticism. There is this shift away from a structured, top-down spirituality into an individual discovering of what is my spiritual nature, who am I spiritually, and from that discovery, finding whatever path meets their needs, and through that, they are lifting consciousness away from the battlefield. Unfortunately, the Orthodox religions lived in the battlefield. And the big shift is resist not. It's away from this mighty sword of truth, getting rid of evil. It is in the individual realization that evil does not exist in the presence of God realized. And as that spreads, we find that our whole society, even though it might look today that we're going through great upheavals, financially and socially, politically, but when you look at the base of what's happening, is that there is an ascendancy of belief out of this top-down structure into the individual realization of their own spiritual nature, however they are defining that. And eventually, if they're seeking, they are going to come to the realization that there is only one, because that is the nature of spiritual reality. That is what every religion teaches in its essence, that there is only one. And that one is expressed as individual being. So this is our practice, this is our art, and the expression of it, rather than painting or music or literature, the expression of this art is the realizing of the presence of God. It is the seeing through the appearances of this world and letting the truth be revealed. And it has to be done individually. It can't be done in a group. The group comes together to join in this consciousness. Where two or more are gathered, there am I. So we come together with this common desire, intent of realizing the presence of God. And we meditate, which is we're doing that in common. But your meditation is not the same as my meditation. We come individually into this presence of God, yet we all feel that peace. We all are aware that there is an atmosphere that takes place that is different than the normal atmosphere of human self that takes place when we meditate and experience this presence. And when we do it together, there is an enhanced sense of this presence, because our meditations are united in oneness. Well, we're going to have a break for lunch, and when we come back after lunch, if there are any questions, I would be happy to entertain questions. Otherwise, we will continue with this practice and meditate. But if there are areas that you're unclear about, and I've had some experience, I will certainly give you my best shot at clarifying that. So have a wonderful break.
Thank you.
Wonderful morning.
Thank you.
I'm just going to ask you all, go and have your lunch. If anyone wanted to go in the garden, we have a magnificent garden. I'd give the key, but I'm not sure just how warm it's going to be. So go and have a nice, quiet lunch and come back about 2 o'clock, and then we will have another unfoldment, huh?
That sounds good to me.
The way it sounds good to all of us. So, and after that, we'll have some juice and cookies. What about that?
Lovely.
Good. Okay, John.
Thank you. You're
going to have a rest now. And I just say to you all, peace and a wonderful lunch. And then if you'll come back at 2 o'clock.